Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Howdy.
Dude,
I put in like 10 minutes of Sudoku. I'm ready.
No one played Sudoku yet, so okay. We'll do that next week. That works.
The secret is it's Sudoku.
Dude, well, what I wanted to ask y'all is, like, it doesn't seem to know whether it wants to be called number one Sudoku or number one Sudokus. And number one Sudokus is, like, clearly the title. That's way better.
Oh, I noticed that. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, the actual icon says it, but in the text has an S.
Yeah, and in the shop, it says S if when you put in the code, but also in their tutorial for themselves. Like, they've gone back to the S. So I'm like, this is an emotional roller coaster for me.
What do we do when there's more than one Sudoku game? Well, clearly you have to add an S. You gotta make it.
This set of Sudokus is number one. No one Sudoku rises above the others, but collectively.
Or maybe it was meant to be an honorific, and it's actually Sudokun.
Ooh, I didn't think about that. That's pretty cool. I wonder if there was like a character in anime. I'm sure it is, like, taking advantage of that pun. It's gotta be, man. They love.
I'm here, and I'm going to punch the heavens with my, I don't know, fist of might. I don't know, some nonsense. It's all anime in the end.
Yeah, it's the fist of the North Star, probably. It's one of those. Oh, hell yeah.
Now, if it puts you at ease, the Sudoku game is only $4, so...
That's cool.
It's going to be a worthwhile $4, I'm sure.
Like, today I Googled, how do you play Sudoku?
Oh my god, me too. I was like, I thought I knew, and I didn't.
Really?
Oh god.
Turns out, once I read the rules, I did know at one point, and I just completely forgot.
You forgot.
Had to add up to 9, and then one cool thing about number one Sudokus is they don't give you the actual rules, but in the very first game, it'll just like it just won't let you move forward until you get it totally right. So you'll learn by the end. You'll know.
Brute force
trial
learning.
Like fire.
They'll force it upon you.
Yeah.
Like, you'll get it or you'll die.
Whoa. It's like the original Mario Brothers putting that one Goomba in there.
And there are people who never surmounted said Goomba.
You just gotta learn how to survive against that one Goomba. And then...
Set.
Yeah.
Also, I realized Tim isn't here today.
I'm right here. I'm just not saying anything.
Oh my god.
Tim knows how to play Sudoku.
Like, brutal, I am.
And I know how to play Sudoku.
Oh, shit.
Well, before the show starts, I'll give you the heads up. The package did arrive today.
Yes!
So, it did show up. And I'm not looking for profit or anything, but my charge would be $145 because that would be the cost of the game, tax they made me pay on it, and basically shipping, and as goofy as it sounds, the $5 toll I paid to go to New Jersey. But that's it. No profit, nothing major, nothing like that. So I'm
assuming I'll do $150. No.
Shut the fuck up.
I got $160.
Well, then I'm sorry, Tim. But
you know what you're bidding on.
They're like, we know we're bidding on making Tim unhappy.
Wait, what game is it again?
Exactly.
Number one Sudoku's collector's edition.
Oh, I got $170. You can throw in an instruction.
Are you outbidding yourself?
What'd you say?
I said if you can throw in an instruction book, then a cool $200.
There you go.
Well, Tim, I'm sorry. But then, unfortunately, if I had number one Sudokus, I would take that offer. But this is for a Mega 10-5. But what were you saying, Tim? You said something.
I already bought
no,
that.
No, I DM'd you. I'm getting your.
He's getting all up in your DMs.
Yeah, I'm sliding into them DMs. follow the dick pics.
Okay. Well, what I'll do when the episode's over, I'll make sure it's my hot. I'm pretty sure it's my Gmail, but I want to double check.
Okay.
He's in your DMs. I'm frantically trying to learn how to play Sudoku. We are not the same.
Okay, that's a tweet. That's so good.
Sudoku! So you are okay with $145?
Yes.
or 150. Let me stop.
Wait, they got it. Listen.
Okay, so I'll make sure to do with that then. And I have to unpack it. That's the convenient thing. So I'm not even going to repackage the thing because like they shipped it to me. Even the box replaced the label. So balances out. But yeah, it's a good, I think it's a good collector's edition. And the book, the art book that comes with it, it's like, it's a decent book. It does like, has like images, like all like demon, like many of the new demons, at least. I didn't count to make sure it was every demon in the game, but it's nice art. But I'm actually a little ashamed of myself though, because in an unprecedented Purnell move, I actually bought their shitty day one DLC. Cause I was like, I want the other demon side quest. I'm so weak.
Isn't all the DLC on the cart too?
Yeah, of course it is. There ain't no way it's not. It's bullshit. And yet this was the one time I was like, oh fuck it. I'm doing it anyway. Like any other time, I'm like, no, never. And I'm sitting there and it's like, oh, it's just whoops, hungry.
The fuck?
Who is that?
It's somebody.
I'm interested in this.
Yeah, I was like, is that somebody's text notification?
No, that's my actual game of Symphony of the Night.
Oh, that is not.
You just have it on hand?
Dude, I got that portable emulator system. Yeah. I am never to be without my Symphony of the Night ever again.
Symphony of the Night.
I'm genuinely curious. I've always wondered this. So I know a lot of people, genuinely, in a sense, myself included, that are huge fans of Symphony of the Night. And there's, of course, been the Metroidvania genre, which spawned from that, and a number of Castlevania games that spawned with that intent. But I never hear about people replaying any of the other ones, just Symphony of the Night.
Like, I replay... Well, there's a couple I haven't beaten yet, but I replay them pretty regularly, yeah. I came into Symphony of the Night late, like I would say about 10 years ago. So, and that was after I had beaten, like, the rest of the ones I had beaten. Like, I think there's only a couple I hadn't played at that point. So, like, my whole opinion of it is that Symphony of the Night is great, and every game that came after it is an improvement.
That is what it is, because that's exactly what it is. And that's not to say Symphony of the Night would have been bad in any way. It's just, like you said, it's great still.
But a lot of people are like, well, Symphony of the Night's the only one you need to play. And I was like, no, there's six games that are better than it.
Like, I might be in the minority, but I actually thought that Portrait of Ruin was really cool. Because
it is. Portrait of Ruin turned 15 really cool. Today. How prescient.
What is that?
It turned 15 today. How prescient.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a shocker.
I have to leave all of this in, don't I?
I didn't know you weren't. Were
damn
you?
Damn it.
You like we didn't do an intro, and like I don't know how to squeeze in an intro like 8 minutes in.
You cut and paste. You record it.
We'll record the intro
record
right
it
quick,
separately,
and then you just cut that stuff back in.
Yeah,
it's a cold open, Joe.
Oh yeah,
oh, yeah.
It's just a really long cold open. Should I play the theme song now?
Yes. Into the intro.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Tim's here. Purnell's here. Hi. Chris is here. Brooke's here. How's everyone doing?
Saturday night!
What?
It is, man.
It is fuck. Tuesday.
I already don't think it's Tuesday.
Don't ruin this for him, you guys. Let him have this.
I need this! My soul!
It's Saturday night somewhere.
I think it's funny, like, for those like who may have heard the earlier cold open, it's funny.
Well, it's in the show. I mean,
podcast till I've heard music.
Well, somebody might just skip it. They look for Joe's like audio print of this is the SML podcast. Like, boom, start here. But basically, you were talking earlier about Tim grabbing a game off of me. And what happened there was I am a sucker for Megaton games, like a huge sucker, and Megaton 5 was one that I wanted. Like, it was one of the reasons I bought the freaking Switch in the first place.
Yep, same. I am same on everything Purnell has said so far. Okay, keep going.
So, like, I put in the pre-order for the special edition back in, like, July or whenever they announced it. First at, like, some Canadian store, and then eventually at a GameStop because it was cheaper and I had to pay, like, weird, crazy shipping and stuff.
Okay, this is where we diverge because I was not able to get a pre-order in.
Oh, I was in Megaton. Oh man, I was chasing all the leads.
Oh dude, I missed like every link going up by like 30 to 40 minutes. Like it would go up right after I check my Twitter, and I check it later. It'd be like, oh, there it is, 40 minutes ago, right after I wasn't looking at it, and it's gone now because everything gets rabidly pre-ordered on the fucking internet these days.
Everything is just taken up by bots, and
it sucks so bad.
What ended up happening was, like, I did the one thing, and then the GameStop was because a friend of mine, who I don't know where he gets his info from, but he's like, Pernell, get on there now. Pre-orders are open. And I jumped on there and pre-ordered it from them. And once I was sure it was good, I canceled the other one. Mm-hmm. But so what happened was, okay, I'm locked in. I'm good. And I've been, like, chomping at the bit, something that never happens. But I've been chomping at the bit for last Friday. And we had our monthly live stream episode of Rhythm and Pixels on Thursday. So episode starts, and I'm on there talking about how GameStop hasn't even sent me a shipping notification, and I was ready to play the game on the very next day. I was anxious. And one of the people in the live stream is one of our listeners from the Philippines, and they released it because they're a little ahead of time on us, so she was already playing the fucker. Like, hey, this is great. I'm going for a magic build. Like, it's not fair. Where's my copy? And then, of course, the next day, everybody and their grandma was like, here's my copy. Here's my copy. I'm waiting for my fucking shipping notification. I'm freaking out angry. Though, understandably, like, I'm not going to, like, call GameStop staff and, like, be a dick. But I was
What you're scared of is that the next thing you're going to get is a notification that your order got canceled for some reason, right?
Yes. And I was definitely anxious about that because there was, like, I was totally ghosted for something that was supposed to be release day arrival, you know? Mm-hmm. So then Saturday morning, I woke up, and on a whim, I was like, I wonder if anybody in the area has this game available still. Because I was already plotting buying the Steelbook and then getting the collector's edition and doing the flim-flam return. I was ready to go. But what ended up happening was I started doing, like, random plot pointings on Best Buy, like putting in random zip codes, like in North Jersey and then, like, Baltimore. And eventually I found one Best Buy that had one Fall of Man edition, and it was like 56 miles away. So I was like, I'll make a drive on it.
So the car. The Friday morning I was doing the same thing, except the closest copy to me was like 180 miles away in like southern Pennsylvania. It would have been like 4 hours to get there.
Jeez.
If it was 56 miles away, I would have been in my car.
And the funny thing about that, the one you saw wasn't there anymore if you were checking Best Buy, because it wasn't there on Saturday when I was looking. But I drove up there, picked it up, ended up making a day out of it by visiting a friend in Camden on the way home. And like, okay, I got home. And then on the drive home, I got the notification, your product is shipping. I'm like, fuck you. So at that point, I was like, well, I'm sure either someone will want this, or I'll just eBay flim flam it, or I'll just return it. So I made sure, like, as you mostly know, I've been kind of away from, like, Facebook. I was like, I don't really feel good about posting and stuff. But I was like, I should post this, which is why I made the post. And I made the comment about, I have a second one. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. And Tim was like, I'll take it. It's like, quick. Real quick, but I'm shocked, because I thought you had the normal Steelbook too.
Oh, I do, but you know, I'm the one who's going to flim flam now. But, you know, I am also a huge Mega 10 guy, so I have gotten almost every collector's edition of like the past 20 years. There's like a couple, like I didn't get Apocalypse when that came out. I didn't get the updated version of Devil Survivor when that came out. Oh.
Have a CE though? I thought it was just it came with like a pen set.
It wasn't like a full CE, but I never picked up that. Those are like the only two physical. Well, and Soul Hackers. Those are like the only physical games I don't have. So, but otherwise, yeah, I have like everything. I have like both versions of Arena, you know, Ultimax and Arena. Yeah, I have all the shit. Basically, in short, it was really burning me that this one evaded me. So it is a great joy that it will be joining the team.
I am glad to hear that thing. Yeah, because like I said, I know I could have eBayed it, but I'm like, I'd rather go to a friend than like some eBay shit. Because I'm not a big fan of the whole buy and flip bit as far as like eBay goes, but mm-hmm. this circumstance would have been different because like I just happened to end up with two. It wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna buy this and then sell it. That wasn't the intention anyway. It happened that way. So I'd rather it go to a friend than some rando on the internet. So
Me too.
It's a zing.
So thank you.
Wow.
Funny thing also, like, as far as like the Megaton stuff owned, like, I'm actually missing a physical of Overclocked 1 too, mainly because I couldn't at the time. Yeah. I couldn't justify the repurchase, but I ended up doing it for Record Breaker because for some reason I felt differently there. But I'm
I never got the Showtime edition of Persona Q 2 because I was in some medals.
And that one, I didn't realize that was the case where I didn't realize how that one would play out, because apparently that was the last 3DS game, like, period.
Oh, no shit. That doesn't really?
Yeah, it was the last 3DS game, like, released.
Physical 3DS game, I'm guessing.
Yeah, because I think the eShop's still getting weird.
Stuff. Oh, yeah. No,
my favorite calculator friend or something. I don't know.
Chris, what kind of stuff have you found on the 3DS shop lately?
I was there lately. But I can't remember.
I'm about to say that makes you fairly well equipped to answer the question.
My copy of Donald Land is here.
Yes.
Thank you again for finding me that.
You're welcome.
Is that McDonald Land?
Donald Land. I'll let Chris take this over. Please explain Donald Land.
Donald Land is a game that came out in the 80s for the Famicom. It was an exclusive to Japan. It was a game starring the McDonald's cast, right? It's kind of a platformer. Not too bad, actually. However...
They dropped the Mick of McDonald's?
Do what?
They dropped the Mick of McDonald's?
Yeah, they called it Donald Land. And it stars Donald McDonald, who is... yeah.
So good.
It's Ronald, but they were like, whatever. Nobody's going to call us out on this. And it features characters like, you know, Mayor McCheese and, you know, Hamburglar, who looks weird, and Fry Kids. And then it has,
Is it the weird, creepier version of Grimace?
No, it's the regular version of Grimace. But however, there's a green version of Grimace that wears like a pork pie hat and has like a jacket on. And his name is Uncle. And, and he doesn't appear in the game. He's in the intro and the ending credits, and that's it.
Dude.
That's so odd. They come up with an original character and not even give him any actual play.
Yeah.
This game is so bizarre. Like, Chris's posts about this game are so lit, and I immediately started looking on eBay. Chris found me, like, a pretty affordable version on eBay. Help me out. Some of them are getting pretty pricey. It is officially licensed, which makes all the stuff Chris talks about just, like, nuts, man. It is a treasure.
Yeah.
Speaking of treasure, do you have the Treasure McDonald's game?
No, but it is really good.
Treasure Island? What is it? Yeah, Treasure Island Adventure?
It was, I used to know this one. It's Ronald's Treasure Hunt or something like that. Ronald's Treasure.
I'll stick with Marvel Land, thank you. That's my amusement park. Oh, McDonald's. Will you ever learn?
McDonald's Treasure Land Adventure.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Amazing.
Treasure
did it. It was actually made by Treasure, who is an actual, like, really legit developer.
I miss Treasure, damn it.
Yeah.
Our old friend Chris Huber was a huge fan of Treasure Land Adventure, and he actually did a 30-minute medley of the entire soundtrack at MAGFest a couple years ago.
Wow, now that's some obscure awesome. Like, I love that shit.
Good old Huber.
I miss him.
Hey, I know you guys have heard Ninja Gaiden ad nauseum. Here's a lick. McDonald's Treasure Adventure. Who's ready to rock? Now everybody raise your hands up once now, because you're going to love it once it starts. I promise.
And it was all drum cover. Like, he did all live drums for it. So it was literally, hey, have fun. You're going to hear something weird tonight.
Do you like Mayor McCheese? Well, here's a banger you'll really enjoy. But, like, I don't know. I wouldn't mind hearing that, honestly. He's a good dude.
Now, the good news is we have a remix from him that we could play at the end of the show.
Sweet.
It's going to have to happen now.
Yeah. So we'll play that. That'll be our closing music this episode.
Donald Land. Just like that, it drops the Mick of McDonald's. That's the whole name of the chain. Like, it's McDonald Land. And they're like, nah.
No,
McDonald Land. It's Donald Land.
New 3DS's game has dropped.
Wait, what?
I said,
in the eShop.
Yeah. I just opened the eShop and there's a new game in there.
What's it called?
I'm trying to load the page. It is so slow.
My Financial Planner?
No, even better than that, but I can't get it anymore because it's on a loading screen.
Oh, my favorite loading screens. Oh,
here we go. Horseshoe Crab Rescue.
Fuck.
It costs $1.
Sounds like something I can get behind.
Hang on. Here's the description. Are y'all ready? Because it's it's more paragraphs than it should be. It's breeding time for the horseshoe crabs, which means they will come to the beach to lay and fertilize eggs. Horseshoe crabs have been around for hundreds of millions of years, but they have one weakness. If they get flipped on their back on the beach, they get stuck. Luckily, humans can help them out. In Horseshoe Crab Rescue, and by the way, the rescue has an exclamation point at the end, and then it's followed by further punctuation, which means that you cannot extract the exclamation from rescue. You will help out these amazing creatures by flipping horseshoe crabs that have gotten stranded on their backs. Hurry around the beach and try to rescue as many horseshoe crabs as you can before time runs out.
Oh, you horseshoe bet crab I will.
Rescue is a casual game with light educational elements. Play through 15 stages of increasing difficulty while trying to beat your top scores and learn a few facts along the way. Be sure to check out the included manual, home manual, while the game is running for more educational info on horseshoe crabs.
I gotta say, I am a major sucker for things where it's like, you can learn a little something about yourself, too. Or maybe you can pick up a little tip on the way.
Maybe in learning about horseshoe crabs, you'll learn about the human spirit.
So what's the release date on that thing? Is that like an actual new release?
It is new. It's the only one with the new tag right now.
That doesn't say how new it is. It could be like the newest game from like May.
I can definitely say that there have been some games that have come out like at least in early 2021. Because that was like around the time I last went into the shop, and I was surprised there were still games coming out for it. Such a surprise. And yet,
I reviewed a Vita game not too long ago.
True.
What was that?
Oh, really?
And it sucked. Horseshoe Crab Rescue came out
today.
What?
Yeah. Available November 16th.
Oh, nice.
Jeez.
New all Nintendo right. 3DS systems only.
Wow.
I need sales numbers, damn it. I need sales numbers, and I need them ASAP. Who is buying this shit? Who is making it viable? Like, don't get me wrong, I have nothing against releases coming to the console, because if people are going to buy them, that's good. But someone's like, I'm going to develop this game. What's it about? You know, rescuing horseshoe crabs. You know what would be a great unit for it? The 3DS. That's where people will go to play games. I'm sure I can release it there. Like, why not put it on the Switch? No, 3DS only.
Joe, get us a code.
I still got a 3DS somewhere. I will. Yeah.
Well, actually, you know what? I don't have a new 3DS, so I couldn't review it.
Oh, Tim, your dreams.
Wait, you don't have a new 3DS?
No.
Oh, well, you're saying as in you have a 3DS, but not
I have a 3DS. I don't have a new, you know.
Okay, I'm okay with that. I thought you were saying like you don't have a 3DS because my brain just kind of linked them. Yeah.
Well, I do have a new 3DS, and as of now, I have a copy of Horseshoe Crab Rescue.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, dear God, don't encourage him, damn it.
So, you're going to review that next week. I'm going to get the info. I'm writing it under your name. You're reviewing that next week.
Horseshoe Crab.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I'm excited to see if, you know, PayPal him a dollar.
No, this was his own mistake. He's going to live with the financial regret.
This is it'll be a freebie.
Might be good. We'll find out. We'll find out next week on the show. Yeah. But for next week, should we get there for this week? Should we get to our reviews?
Yeah, sure. Go to bed.
Like, yes, I want to get the fuck out of here.
I mean, how can you sleep after that exciting news?
I had to work. This was a board meeting week, so it screws up my whole everything, my whole sense of time. And I'm also tired because I was at work until like very late last night. So
let's make like with a horseshoe crab and flip these reviews on their feet.
Oh my God.
So they can that scuttle away.
Yeah.
Stretch it out, Caramello.
I've been waiting to say maybe the real friends that we made were just the horseshoe crabs we flipped along the way.
Nice.
I'm not sure they'll like it.
You've
so
waited
much
your
anymore.
Whole life for this moment to say that.
If you see a horseshoe crab on its back, gently
Brooke
pick
is
it up,
already writing a pro review for
never
me.
The tail.
I honestly
back into the water.
Got it.
Horseshoe crab rescuing is a thing.
Oh yeah,
I just imagine. I mean, I could see myself doing it if I happen to see one, but it's another thing to just picture myself like, what are you doing? We're going to go to the beach specifically.
The top result is Delaware. Is a Delaware horseshoe crab rescue.
Really?
Yep.
That doesn't surprise me.
That might have, maybe I'll change my tune. Like, this is a good way to meet people. Hey, do you like horseshoe crabs? I know I do.
Dude, let's rescue some horseshoe crabs.
Horseshoecrabsonly.com.
Wait a minute. Horseshoe crabs are 100 million years old. Is that how we got Joe Biden?
Oh my God.
He's a hero. He's actually a secret horseshoe crab for the horseshoe crab empire. Gotta flip some bills.
I'm like raising my hat and doing a little dance.
Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so first game to talk about tonight is called Blue Reflection Second Light, developed and published by Koei Tecmo Games. It released November 8th on Switch, PS4, and PC for $59.99. As the last summer day fades, all is illuminated with gorgeous translucent designs by Mel Kishida, as well as a story that depicts the youth of lifelike girls based on a theme of human identity and bonding. A new title in the Blue Reflection series is here. Pernell, tell us about this one.
I'll lead off immediately by saying that I was familiar with the original Blue Reflection, but I hate the heck I'm about to say this, but I let my machismo get in the way. I was like, I don't know if I'll really get along with this game. It's all about, you know, bonding between teenage girls, and I just ignored it like a goober. And I can tell you right now two things. One, you don't need to play the first game to play this one. There will be a little bits in there that get referenced and the like, but overall, I was able to get into it without that. And secondly, I was a damn fool, because this game, at least, is actually pretty nice. Like, it's got a heart. And I say that humorously, knowing we just talked about Mega 10 without the heart, you know. But I digress. So, the idea behind this game is that your main character goes by the name of Ao, A-O, so it could be pronounced any number of unexpected ways. And she wakes up in a school that is surrounded by water. You can't leave, and there are only three other residents at the school, none of which have memories. She doesn't even know how she got there. She just knows she went to school one day, and next thing she knew, she was at this building, and she couldn't leave. So her and her new friends have to make lives at this facility trying to make ends meet. Fortunately for them, amenities are taken care of, but they have food available to them, and they can, like, cook, clean, and whatever. But again, they can't leave. So one day, while hanging out and talking with one of her new classmates, something weird happens. And a place opens up called a heartscape. And the girls decide to venture in and begin their adventure in hopes of figuring out, one, why none of them have memories except for Al, who was the only one who came with her memories intact. And two, maybe find a way to get themselves back home. So this isn't actually an RPG series by Gust, which you may know from, like, the Atelier series, which is worth mentioning because there are actually surprisingly a few Atelier features in this game, or features that you know of from that franchise. The game primarily takes place in two environments. Two environments. One being the heart space. Heart space is where you go outside of the school environment to engage in dungeon-like action and fun, to search for resources, search for memories, which are crystal items on the map, and engage in combat. As you're exploring these heartland environments, which are basically places that are built of the memories of the girls at the school, you will look around for various things. And when you're running around, you have the usual map traversal abilities. You can, you know, crawl under objects, check things, pick up items, swing your scythe, which I'll get into in a second, to cut grass and find items, or engage in combat. If you come across an enemy on the field, you can either sneak up on them by pressing the stealth button and then striking them from the back, or just run up on them. And once you have done that, battle begins. And believe it or not, this game has an interestingly unique combat system. It has a time metric in that, you know, it's like an active time bar that runs. Everyone shares the time bar. And as the bar slides across, for every tick on said bar, the character will generate what's known as, like, ether. So in increments of 1,000. So 1,000 ether, 2,000 ether, whatever. Once they've reached the point where they've acquired ether, they can use an attack. And they all have different ether costs and different traits that can be used on enemies. They work in a weird way in that they all kind of run on, like, a different gear level. It's the best way to describe it, where at the beginning of the battle, everyone's at level 1. But when you pick an attack, it carries properties, including, you know, the attack power and stuff, but also the amount of which it will speed up future gauge accruals. So you might be like, okay, I want to use this attack, which will make the next attack gain come that much faster. But the more attacks you use, you'll also change gears or shift gears, which will allow you to move further up the time bar and get more ether, which will allow you to do more and better attacks because you'll unlock them as you go. But once you reach third gear, you will do a magical girl transformation and actually get more powerful skills. You'll have a new outfit and you'll just be flat out more powerful. So what ends up happening here is you find yourself in a situation where you're trying to maintain attack count, combos and the like, and making sure that you can get all of your girls to keep comboing with each other to get themselves up to magical girl status and start wreaking havoc on the enemies. And it's a constant flow of time because the enemies are doing the same thing. They have a time gauge that goes the opposite direction, and when they reach a certain point, they can do attacks on you. And depending on if they do a super powerful attack, they can disrupt your combo and in turn potentially even make you regress in gear shifting and make you lose your transformations and thereby make you weaker in battle. So it's this weird battle of attrition going back and forth of trying to nail down combos and kill things off. Not as it goes pretty quickly in normal battles, but the boss battles can take a little bit of time. But overall, they're all still fairly snappy combat features. And I honestly really like the combat system, with the only detriment being, for as flashy as the battles can be, you'll be spending so much time trying to time like counterattacks and blocks and support moves and the time gauge that you will be missing half of the stuff going on in battle. You're just like, watch the bar, watch the bar. Now's your chance. Go get the sniper thing. Shoot a bullet. And so that's an interesting, that's a thing that it doesn't hurt the game, but I do wish I could keep up with both ends of the spectrum sometimes. The other half of the game is the actual school itself, because when you go back to school, this is where the girls live in their downtime. And the thing that you generally do here is the atelier-like crafting structure. You can craft items that you can use for like healing your characters or like, you know, bolstering their attacks and stuff like that. And this is done by finding items and taking them back to school. In addition to that, you can also craft like food, which can be used for healing, and facilities. Because, funny enough, these girls are freaking masons and hemstresses and everything. Because you're making clothes, you're making booths, you're making actual facilities that you can utilize for both just fun that the girls use for, like, you know, various story events and the like, but also for various stat bumps. Because, for example, let's say you make a snack bar. You build a snack bar. You choose a place on the school that can accommodate the space for it. You build it and you set it up. Now, once you've built the snack bar, in combat out in the hard space, you get a small or medium attack boost while you're out there, so long as that facility exists in your school. How does that work? I have no fucking clue. Doesn't matter. It's fun. You can't have everything built as you go. I mean, initially you can just build whatever you get, but eventually you'll get more stuff that you can build than you have space to accommodate. So you'll have to actually be wise about choosing which and what you want to build and use, which is part of the fun. It makes for great customization. And then lastly, at the school, you can also take the girls out on different dates, because you will get new girls that show up at the school through mysterious means, which I think is also a large, awesome aspect of the narrative. It's like figuring out what the hell's even going on in this place. But you can take the girls out on dates at the different facilities, and they'll walk hand in hand together and have conversations. And depending on where you go in the school, you'll also have story-based, like, cinema scene conversations, which can boost their bonds. And well, you might be thinking, well, that's totally Persona. One, Persona's not the only game that can do that, so screw you. And two, in addition to that, it's not really like the whole rank up thing in this game. Instead, when you bond with the girls, you get TP, not toilet paper, tech points or talent points. And you can use the talent points to unlock different abilities on their talent trees, which are expanded as different events occur in the game. So, for example, Kokoro might be able to like boost like her attack power or her defense power, or even earn a new skill. Whereas a support character, rather than have attacks and stuff, since she doesn't have those, she can actually get like abilities that will help the other characters in combat, like the actual fighting characters, or make it easier to like get items when you're scavenging, things like that. I mean, all in all, this game has been a surprising good time for me. It's at the point where, like, I was reading the recent Game Awards nominees, and I'm kind of sad that this one isn't one of them, and yet Cyberpunk is. Because, really?
Yeah, that's worth being sad over.
Yes. Like, this is the kind of game that I feel is worthy of being listed as a contender for, like, the game, the RPG of the year. You know, that kind of deal. It's a it's a very good game. The narrative is awesome. The characters have heart to them. Like, there's a lot of conversation that take place in this game, and I never once felt myself going, "Ugh, vapid teenage girl chatter." So I was like, "Oh, I wonder what's going on with Coker. I hope everything's okay there. I wonder if whose heart space is going to open up next." Like, it's actually really cool. And I mean, I was going to say, like, and they do treat everybody awesome, but they actually do. But being that it's a Gust game, just know in advance, they do the usual thing they do in the Atelier games also, which is like, every once in a while, okay, I got to crawl underneath this building. And it's like, whoop. Character dialogue was like, please don't look under my skirt while I'm, or look at my butt while I'm crawling. And the other character's like, why the hell would I do that? Like, but like, junk like that. But otherwise, like, I think everybody's pretty well treated in this game. Like, this, it's a genuinely good narrative, and I am very happy with this game. I am glad the review came through, because I would have been ignoring this franchise, but now I'm going to go look into the anime when I'm done with the game. Like, I am a fan, and nice. I genuinely believe this is a good buy product.
Well, the game is $60. There is also a deluxe edition that comes with some bonus content for $73, and an ultimate edition that also includes a season pass for $115. What are your thoughts on all of this?
I'm generally with the buy the normal game element. At least for now, I'd ignore the bonus stuff, because a lot of their bonus stuff is usually like weird costumes, like bikini packs, and like, I don't give a crap about that. But the gameplay at its core is worth your scratch. If you're down with all that other bonus, like costume packs and the like, then knock yourself out. But for me, I'm all about that base game. Get the base game, get it now, and enjoy the wealth of RPG goodness that we've got coming up on running on the Switch this season. Because you have tons to play right now, and it's awesome. So this should be amongst your list.
Cool beans. All right. Next game to talk about is Encased, a sci-fi post-apocalyptic RPG developed by Dark Crystal Games, published by Prime Matter, released September 7th on Steam for $29.99, a tactical sci-fi RPG set in an alternative 1970s where an enormous and inexplicable artifact, the Dome, is discovered in a remote desert. Fight enemies, explore the anomalous wasteland, level up your character, join one of the forces in the ruined world, and more. Chris, tell us about your time with Encased.
All right, so Encased. This is a, I just found out that there's such a thing as CRPG. I actually didn't even know about the term before. But it's like, it's those kind of like isometric, like, you know, it's click computer somewhere. RPG. Yeah, computer RPG. Click here to go there. I never heard CRPG before. It shows you how much.
Yeah, it's like Fallout, like the
Wasteland series.
Divinity Original Sin games, the Pillars of Eternity, those shits.
Yeah. So this is one of those. So it starts off innocently enough. You are a person with a past that you kind of, you know, pick whenever you make your character or choose a pre-made character. You are going into a dome in order to do some work. And the thing about the dome is that it's this thing that just kind of like got discovered that nobody knows what it is, but people found out that they can go into it, and like, it's got all of these, like, you know, artifacts and like items and flora and fauna that are, you know, unique to the inside of it. And everybody also found out that you can go in, but you cannot go out. Once you're in the dome, that is where you spend the rest of your life.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So of course, capitalism takes hold and a corporation decides to kind of occupy the dome. And so you are on your way to a job that you're going to be doing for the rest of your life, which is, again, it depends on the character that you pick. And I'll get to that in just a minute. And so, you know, you're going to your big corporate job with the Cronus Corporation, which is, you know, transparently evil corporation. No, not really. But very, you know, clearly bureaucratic and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's 70s. So everybody's just wearing like, you know, you know, monochrome jumpsuits and stuff. It's very Star Trek. anywho's, you get in there and learn how to do things and set out to work scanning and possibly collecting these artifacts that are around that, you know, the scientist types are, like, you know, studying and things like that. And then things happen, and suddenly there's basically an apocalypse within the dome. And now it's a couple of years later, and whereas you had a job before, now you have a life that you have to, like, try and preserve. You're basically surviving in this place where, you know, the remnants of said corporation now exist, and people have broken off into factions and things like that. And so you kind of things sort of realign, and you get to kind of learn the politics of the land while still, of course, exploring and collecting and doing all this other stuff, basically kind of playing it how you want to, which is kind of interesting. So that's, like, the general gist of the story. You know, trying to be light on spoilers, but I mean, it says post-apocalyptic, and when you get there, there's no apocalypse. Therefore,
right. Yeah.
I kind of have to
reveal the math
that.
Is there.
I have to reveal that much, because otherwise you're going to get into this game, because I'm going to tell you, the prologue, like a lot of things in this game, is a little longer than it should be. So you're going to kind of feel like, oh, this is the actual game. Like, because when I got in there and they started training me on my job, and they're like, okay, so once you're done talking to, you know, this person and getting your, you know, getting trained on this and that, and then report back here and we'll finish your thing so that you can have a job. And I'm like, okay, great. So once I talk to this guy, things are going to go wrong, and suddenly I'm going to be on the, you know, on the short end of the stick. And it's like, no, you're actually going to talk to, like, six different people and then get your job and then start doing your job. And then at some point, you know, et cetera. So yeah, the prologue, it was kind of fun because it sort of threw me for a loop. But even though I knew it was coming, it was like, it was so delayed that I was like, what's happening? Anyways. Okay. So that's the gist of that. So the way that character creation and jobs work is that when you get into the when you start the game, you're basically choosing one of six uniform colors, like the wings. So, like, silver wing, orange wing, blue wing, black wing, white wing, and another. I don't remember what the other was. And they're from, like,
Can
if you're
dark wing,
there was a black wing, but yeah, dark wing is kind of like what that is. Yeah,
let's
get dangerous.
Yeah, right. yeah. Actually, the Black Wings are dangerous. They're like the security, like, gunhead, like, you know, army types. And most of them break off into a faction that basically becomes like this seemingly like kind of a fascist military organization. It's kind of great. Anyways, I don't have the full story on them because I didn't beat this whole game, so I'm not going to try and cast aspersions.
Yeah, that's a
on
huge game.
Yeah, it's huge. Anyways, so, like, depending on the wings is going to kind of that's going to kind of determine your background, of course, but also your starter skill set. And, you know, it will affect your stats and things like that. But ultimately, of course, the wings are going to eventually, you know, break off into, like, different factions and different, you know, not necessarily all the factions are going to be based on those wings. Like, there's, you know, for instance, there's Video Game Church, which is where people decided that instead of, you know, some people are trying to escape the dome. They're trying to figure it out. And, you know, hint, hint, maybe you are too. But some people are just like, I'm just going to escape and play, you know, just live in virtual reality for the rest of my days. And, like, they have churches established for virtual reality. And so it's literally like Video Game Church, which is kind of great. And that's, like, one of the factions. So, of course, it's not super tied to any particular job. But anyways, so the job's going to determine your background, and therefore, what that affects the most, and this is where the game is really cool, lots of dialogue choices are basically kind of hidden behind what wing you chose and, like, what your different skill sets are. Like, the way that you converse with people is literally determined, like, from the very start by, like, different choices that you make and different stats that you kind of build on. To the extent that you can create a character that has only one point of intelligence and is thus nonverbal, and that character will have an entirely unique experience.
Sweet.
Because that character won't be able to talk, and so people will change the kind of information they reveal because they believe that you don't understand anything. So, like, it's like crazy stuff like that. It's, like, really cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I know the old Fallout games, if you had, like, a one or a zero in intelligence, they would have some fun dialogue options there.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, some characters, again, probably like Fallout, because I only know a little bit about Fallout, so you'll have to forgive me on this. I haven't really played them. But some characters that have, like, a high mechanical, like, piloting ability can actually wear mech suits kind of things. Like, you know, for basically, like, security and heavy lifting and stuff. And they can, you can, like, drive your own truck and things like that. At some point, I didn't do this myself, but I saw this. I saw somebody else do this. You can actually take over, like, what's basically, like, a land train and kind of create your own mobile base, which is incredible. And actually, my character's kind of on that path, so that's, like, kind of what I'm going for. Because I went with the Blue Wings because they're basically the blue-collar engineers, like, you know, handy people. Like, you know, not the hoi polloi, you know, silver and white wings who are like, you know, the basically the people who are the higher ups at the corporation, but also not the orange, which are like, ex-convicts and stuff who are or just regular convicts who are basically into, you know, forced into kind of this slave labor, doing all the like heavy work at, you know, the point of a gun practically. So things like that. Anyways. So yeah, the way that that's basically the story and like the way that it's designed and like there's a million stats. I'm not even going to go into all of them. The gameplay is really cool because it's, you know, you click here to go there, you click on things to look at things, you take items and stuff like that. And you actually have lots of different ways you can interact with stuff. It sort of goes into like, in a really vague way, like there's choosing violence where like you want to open a door, you can kick it down. There's like criminal, which is there's not really crime in the game. If as long as you don't get caught, you can basically do things that whatever you want to do. And sneaking is kind of like sneaking is really easy to do. So it's like if you choose a life of quote unquote crime, it's more like you're just clever. But then you can like lockpick the door. You can sneak around and just keep enemies keep people inside the donut of like you can sneak in this area kind of thing. And then there's like, you know, basically like the kind of diplomatic way of doing things, you know, kind of following the rules and you can kind of have people do things for you. You can have companions in this game, although companions I find frustrating because they operate on secret of mana rules. That is to say, if you walk somewhere, you don't quite know exactly what they're going to do. They're not going to follow your every step. And so they might walk themselves directly into traps and like kind of go off screen and stuff like that. And you kind of have to wrangle them. So, fortunately though, like the game's prepared for that. It actually has perks. Like, if you choose a lone wolf style of gameplay, it's literally called lone wolf. So there's like all these kind of things you can choose to like kind of make your chosen style of gameplay like even better. So anyways, that's basically the gameplay. Like I said, it's going around exploring, grabbing stuff, trading stuff, and, you know, eventually uncovering the mysteries, whether through violence, cleverness, or diplomacy. And actually what I understand, I didn't know this until actually just today, you can literally do a pacifist route through this entire game and not fight a single thing.
Nice.
Wow.
And almost every weapon has a disabling feature rather than murdering people. And there are so many weapons in this game that you wouldn't consider weapons. Like, I actually got through the first couple of quests where my melee weapon was a janitor's broom that I had stolen.
Awesome.
Yeah, it worked real good against rats, whereas my heavy machine gun really didn't. So
shocking. Opening fire on a rat didn't work out well.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, no real complaints. I mean, the graphics are a little dated, but I mean, that's okay. It just runs all the better on older computers as far as that goes. Although the backgrounds look solid, I really like the textures and stuff. Storytelling is really good, but if I had to point my finger at the story, I would, and you know, accuse it of anything, it would be being slightly overwritten. It took me, I didn't even, on my first day of playing this game, I didn't get to do combat because I was talking to so many people.
Oh, wow.
And for so long, but it was all good. It was like, it was good dialogue. It's voice acted. Even the narrator's like this kind of, you know, kind of a good old boy narrator. It's kind of weird, but, you know, cause it kind of supposed to have that a little bit of Old West feel to it, I suppose. But there's very few complaints about this, honestly. It is a great time if you're into this kind of thing where, you know, you're doing the CRPG thing. I guess fans of Fallout and whatnot are going to really enjoy this one.
Nice. So for $30, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, $30, I say this is a buy it because, I mean, that's... and I understand, like, they had a very successful Kickstarter, as far as I know, like, some years ago, and it's been in beta forever, so I totally understand the relatively low price. It's kind of like, you know, a double-A game instead of a triple-A game, but, yeah, I mean, if this is the kind of thing that sounds interesting to you, then it's very well done, so I'd say go ahead and get it.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right, next up is Clang 2, developed by Tinimations, published by Rattlelake Games, released November 17th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $14.99. Imprisoned in a facility at an unknown location, Clang must hone his rhythm combat skills inside audiovisual simulations. Fast attack the enemy with flashy fireballs, dodge and counter enemy attacks, and deal enough lightning damage to shame even the greatest gods of mythology. Achieve a euphoric state of trance through the skillful play in this rhythm action game with hypnotic beats and high-speed combat. Tim, tell us about your time with Clang 2.
Clang 2. All right, this is an RPG, so this review probably won't be as long. so yeah, this is a rhythm game. The gist is that, yeah, you are... I mean, this game has got some... story and lore going on for sure. If you want to engage and absorb it, there's lots going on. It's not just, I mean, it can just be level after level of rhythm action if you want to do it that way, but
yeah, they have like a story mode and a just a casual, like, just get to it and play the songs mode.
Yeah. They have it's kind of surprising for just how much they decided to do with it. But yeah, so at the base of it, you are the Clang, become the Clang. So you're this dude holding a tuning fork sword. And it will put you into a level where you are, you know, just like a simple 2D, not like super wide area. You're not directly controlling your character, but, enemies will, depending on what you're fighting, the things kind of take different forms. Like at the basic level, it's just like these little star creatures will swoop in and a different prompt will pop up on each of them. There are larger boss enemies that are just kind of hanging out in the background, and their attacks that you need to avoid will present themselves with different prompts. Basically, what you're doing with the gameplay is you are pointing the Clang. You're pointing your tuning sword with your analog stick, your left stick, and then you are hitting the square button to clang. To clang. I don't know. It's kind of a silly name. But anyway, yeah. So it'll take the form of like, okay, there's a big pink circle coming in over to the upper right. So you point your stick in that direction and you hit the square and then you hit that circle. There will be like a little, there are indicators to help you hit it on time with the beat. So you know if you're like a little too early, too late, etc. But yeah, you want to hit it on the beat, and then you will either, depending on what the thing is. So there's that. So there's one where it's like, okay, here's a circle. You point at it, you hit it, boom, good. Then it's like, oh, there will be like a green arrow that will pop up. So you need to not only point the stick at the arrow, you then need to adjust your angle to match that of the arrow. So there's like a little bit of like extra accuracy that's needed there before you hit the button. And when you hit that, then your character will then like kind of dodge out of the way across the screen. And then there is another one where you have to point and then hold the button down for a certain amount of time, which and you'll just like pouring energy into something out of your hand. I guess that is the aforementioned flashy fireballs. So that's pretty straightforward stuff when it's just like, oh, here comes like a thing that floats in and it has a prompt on top of it. And you push the button and you swoop up and hit that. And then you will have larger creatures that are just hanging out in the background, and you're your character ends up, you know, dodging and flying all around the screen, depending on where things are popping up. It's a little weird in that part of what the game builds itself on is that the like the button prompt layouts are somewhat procedurally generated, so they don't show up in the same exact places every time, which is a kind of a double-edged tuning blade, I guess, in that, you know, usually when I'm playing a rhythm game, like a lot of it, in getting a good feel of it is getting into a repetition of like what the pattern of a level is and like learning that pattern and like figuring out and just getting that muscle memory. But in this, you can't really get that because it is just like changing the angles sometimes and where things pop up, which is, I don't know, it keeps the experience fresh, but on some level, it also keeps you from getting into maybe as solid a groove as you might want with the game.
Yeah, big thing about rhythm games is usually learning the pattern and replicating it and having a perfect performance. And if the game is continually changing, it's hard to really get a perfect performance that way.
Yeah, but it's not like the things that it's having you do are super complex. It's not like, you know, in like a Guitar Hero where it's like you have five different buttons that you're trying to manage in different note scales. It's like, okay, well, you're still just at the end of the day pointing the stick and pushing the button.
No.
It's just things pop up at slightly different angles sometimes between tries of a level. So I don't know, it might be good for some people. It's like, oh, because, you know, it is differing your gameplay experience, but at the same time, like, you may be sacrificing some groove to get that. Anyway, the game is broken up. There's like a couple dozen songs in here. The lead artist is Blind.
Friend of the show. We should be forthright with that.
I'm not friends with him, so fuck this game.
Well, I'm friends with Jordan, so.
Yeah, I have been a, you know, he's an old school OC Remix dude, so I have been a fan of his music for, you know, going way back. So, he's good at it. And he you know, there's
the good ints stuff.
Yeah, the good ints music. The other artists on here aren't bad, but Blind, I mean, is definitely my favorite. Go figure, someone that I have a pre-existing enjoyment of their music. So the game will present itself in after you get through, you know, the tutorial, it'll give you like four or five songs at once, like kind of in a group. And then you need to achieve a certain cumulative rank on those songs to unlock the next boss and move forward. So it's like, well, the higher your rank, you get like 3 points, or if it's a little lower, you get 2 points, or if it's kind of ass, you get 1 point, and you need to get like 10 total points to move on to the next boss, or unlock the next elevator or artificial simulation or what have you. And then once you get past that, then it will unlock, you know, a few more tracks. And then you have to get to a new point total to unlock the next thing. And that next point total, like it includes. So it's like once you get past like the first boss, it's not like you have to get like another 10 points on the next set of songs. It's just like you have to get an additional 10 points out of the 8 total songs or whatever that you have unlocked. So you can go back and, you know, play up those previous levels just to kind of like those easier levels, I guess I should say, to help buff up your star count and keep the game progressing. I didn't find it overwhelmingly difficult to keep accruing stars and keep moving forward, as it were. There are some of the stages, like some of the bosses, I had a trickier time kind of following my dude as he kind of zipped around and there was things moving around in the background. Kind of a drawback of the game, but it's kind of necessity, is that like the backgrounds aren't super flashy generally, because you need to be able to track your character and everything and the prompts, the big fat prompts that are going on in the foreground. So there isn't like a lot of, they don't have things in the background to distract you, which again is, you know, good, bad. It's good because it lets you concentrate on the game, but you know, it's not the most interesting stuff it just makes things feel kind of a little samey, I guess, in my opinion, in that particular aspect. But I do think that the whole thing does work pretty well overall. I think the gameplay works well with the rhythm, even if it sometimes, like, you will unlock more kind of button combination prompts. It's not really combinations, but different things. So it's like on the, you know, on the simple tap one, they'll have things where it's like, oh, you need to tap it like four or five times, the button in rhythm. Or on the ones where you have to hold down the button, the target will like move in an arc around you, so you have to follow it with the stick. So it does add in some variance. And
that
it'd
be nice if it taught you that stuff, though.
No, it layers it in as there, like.
I mean, I know I did the first series and it was throwing some of that stuff in, but the game never explained it yet at that point.
Yeah.
So it's
kind of like go with it.
Shit just comes out of order, it seems.
Well, I feel like at the end of the day, you know, at its worst, like, it's still kind of nice just to zone out like a little bit and listen to the music and just kind of go through some simple button patterns. At its worst, it's like some of the stages is just like, ah, God, I just don't know what's going wrong here because there's this thing with its two giant hands in the background and things are moving around and I can't quite keep track of what's going where. Like, they do have like a little like sparkly light flash that will go from one, you know, target to another. And sometimes you really got to concentrate to follow that thing around the screen or else you will just get completely fucking lost. And you do have a life bar on these levels. You can only F up so many times before it, you fail and you have to try it again. And then the pattern's a little different and it's like, So like, I don't think it's like in, you know, exceptional, slam dunk rhythm game overall, but a lot of what it does works, I think, well enough, and the music is pretty banging that I think it's probably going to be worth a shot for some people.
No, what would you do to make it a slam dunk?
I don't know. I'm not a game designer. It's there's some things that don't feel as good. It's tough with rhythm games sometimes. No. Do I need more complexity to the gameplay? Will that make it more difficult on, will that just throw me at, push me about even harder on like some of the trickier stages? Maybe it is having, an option for, you know, like a preset pattern for each level. And then maybe after you get through it, then you can be like, okay, I'm going to turn on the random stuff. Right. So that way you can get through the game and get into a better groove and like just kind of work your way through a pattern over and over again and learn it. And then worry about, more procedurally generated things later. Cause I feel it's just like, oh, you know, adding more different, like kind of gameplay movements or spicing up the backgrounds might also have detrimental effects, but you know.
Well, as it stands, it's only $15. What do you think of it?
It's only $15. Look at you buttering me, Joe.
I think for rhythm game, that's actually pretty good. Most rhythm games have higher prices due to
it is 30 levels. Like, it is no small thing.
Yeah.
In there. Yeah, it's like a gentle buy or like a hard try. It's like right on that like border for me. But it's worth the money if you want to give it a shot, for sure.
I think cool. I just chuckle at the fact that you came in, you were like, well, this isn't an RPG, so this shouldn't be a very long review. You definitely came either equate to or eclipse both of ours.
Really good. I don't think on I RPGs eclipsed. Though.
Oh, mercy.
Oh, man. Well, Tim, that is it for you. I guess we'll let you get going.
Good night, Tim.
Sounds good. Yeah, good night. I'm going to go get some teeps.
I don't know what the hell that is, but count me out.
That's a word that enters your vocabulary when you have a baby, and he doesn't go sleeping, he goes teeping. It's big teeps.
God.
Well, the adorableometer is off the chart, so I'll.
No, he's like six now. I should really get it out of my vocabulary. It's not, he doesn't want to hear that.
Wait until he's like 30, then give it a rest. I healed him.
Daddy, what the hell are you talking about?
Teepee, little man.
I'm teepee. Shut up, Dad. I'm
teepee. Yeah,
28.
Save it for his first girlfriend.
Oh man!
He has to be back by 10. He gets a little teepee.
He gets steepy.
He's toilet papered. My dad is really a real hard ass about rationing toilet paper in this house. I can't explain it.
Yeah. I guess if your ass is that hard, you don't need as much toilet paper.
Oh shit!
Sing.
It's not about the. It's not about the firmness of your ass. It's about the firmness of the poop.
I know that's right.
Words Tim, to live by.
And Tim claims he doesn't have any.
Science by SML.
Tim claims he doesn't have any good last words.
Sometimes I do, but sometimes okay. Yeah, I'm leaving now. I'm leaving on that note. The poop note. The poop note. Later.
The brown
good
note.
Night.
The brown note. All right. Next game to talk about is Hoplegs, developed by Y-Key, published by Aurora Punks, released. Y key or Y Kev? Son of a bitch. I hate when it has it's Y Kev.
Just wanted to, I guess.
I hate when the little red squiggly line under the word obscures whether it's like a Y or a V. Curse you, OneNote for Windows 10. Anyway, Hoplegs, developed by YKev, published by Aurora Punks, released November 12th on Switch and out of Steam Early Access for $19.99. Hoplegs is an unconventional and entertaining platformer where the gamepad buttons are your legs. Chris, tell us about your time with Hoplegs.
It's YKev. I just looked at the eShop.
Why not, Kev?
Okay. So anyway, for $19.99... Okay, so Hoplegs, yes. So the story of Hoplegs, and this I promise I'll pare this down to like half an hour, is you're a wizard who has to go warn King Darthur about a coming danger. You're the apprentice of a wizard who I'm sure is named Marlin or something. And Marlin has exhausted all of his magic power and therefore cannot transport you to the castle to warn the king about the oncoming danger. So you have to... You, a mere apprentice, have to teleport yourself over to the castle. It's a complicated spell. Apparently, if you think about anything else while you're trying to teleport, bad things will happen. And so while trying to cast this teleport spell, Hoppy is like, I think it's Hoppy. Anyway, it's something. It's Hop something. He's like, oh, did I remember to pack everything? And he thinks about a suitcase and a box, you know. And he casts the teleport spell and turns himself into a box.
No.
Basically luggage because, you know, well, I guess it's unclear. It's a box and things come out of it. I should think that would make it luggage, but it doesn't look like luggage. Anyways, so now you have to take the slow way to get over to King Darthur's castle. And that is by using whatever you can push out of that block in order to propel yourself across. Looks like quite a lot of levels, actually. Basically what happens is that you have this box, and let's say you're standing up, you know, where the top of your head is on the top, bottom of your head is on the bottom, you know, you're upright in a manner of speaking. So the B button will cause the bottom thing to jut out and then propel, and then the like Y button causes the left thing, the A button causes the right thing, the X button causes the up thing, and so you gotta like propel yourself into the air and then you bounce up, and then you may have to like propel yourself off of something that's solid right next to you, so you push the Y button to propel the thing that, you know, next to you, and that'll cause you to like move forward a little bit in a bouncy way. And physics takes over at that point. It's a physics puzzle game. And here's the thing. Your character's probably going to get flipped around. Now all those buttons are still relative to the position of your character's face.
So you are
now upside down. Now X is how you interact with the ground, etc. And
shout out to Trivium Champ for dropping 140 biddies.
Thank you, Trivium Champ, for that random number. So yeah, it's basically that you're going to get flipped around and you have to like use the different items. And I say different items because actually you can unlock a whole variety of them. Even the front of the, of the screen, like the title screen shows a chimney as one of the items. There's also like a little candy cane kind of thing. There's a foot, you know, stick, all kinds of like random stuff. And anywho's, so the goal is, of course, to jump over field and plain and get to the different flags at the end of the stage. And you're granted a if you get through the stage, of course, you can access the next stage. And then you're given bonuses. I think one of them, because it's a trophy, is probably a time bonus. I would not know because I've never gotten it. The other one is a different prize. If you can get to the end without flipping yourself around, that is to say, maintaining relative uprightness, at least what? I guess, because I've also never done that. So here's the thing about hop legs. It is hard. It is so hard to do anything. It will absolutely make you feel helpless until you start to get used to it. And I only just started to get used to it. I mean, I did get through a few levels by the sweat of my brow, but yeah, it's rough stuff. You can access a lot of the levels. I don't know if it's all the levels, because again, I have not beaten this. But you can do a time trial.
Drop it, bitch! So you
can kind of see like what the game has to offer. It appears to offer snow levels. And oh, that geez. Just makes me laugh. And the game knows how hard it is, because by the end of the first stage, they're saying something like, because the narration, like, there's actually, like, the game is acted. Like, it's got voice acting, it's got animated cutscenes, there's narration throughout the stages as you progress. And one of the narrations is like, by this time, you should have mastered the mechanics of the game, while you're, like, sitting here trying to get past this, like, new major hurdle that they've put in your way. It's hilariously, like, you know, noob shaming, but without like a lot of malice. I don't know. It doesn't feel like the game has malice towards you. They're just kind of like, well, you bought the game, this is what you got. But
you signed up for this.
Yeah. That what seems interesting to me, and of course I didn't get to test this out myself, is that it has a solo adventure. It also has a co-op adventure. So I'm kind of like, I'm curious to know what that's like. And it also has a party and versus mode with up to four players. And that to me makes it seem like it might be a Toast Time smash up situation, where you get like four players into this absolute chaos and everybody has fun. So that's pretty good. But yeah, that's basically Hop Legs in a nutshell. It's it looks like it's basically kind of going for like a Rick and Morty animation style. It's very, you know, Adult Swim looking, but you know, it's not like trying to be hilarious or anything like that. Most of the hilarity is in how badly you will fail all the time. And well, if you find that hilarious, then
drop it, bitch! Trivium Champ dropping more biddies. He has dropped another 70, I think, if I'm doing my math right. Thank you, Trivium Champ. We love seeing all the biddies drop.
This reminds me of the times when people were trying to like break your computer by dropping too many bits.
Oh, I know. Singles. And the computer would just, oh, I do not miss that computer. Not at all. But Hop Legs is $20. What are your thoughts?
Oh, Lord. It is hard to recommend for most people. But there's a certain subset of people out there who really enjoy challenging physics puzzles and just kind of having all of their... I can't think of the word. I'll think of the word later. But like basically having all their faculties taken away from them. And for them, this is a good must buy, because it is it's very cruel.
This sounds like the kind of puzzle platformer that'll really push your buttons.
Oh. Well, I'll take that at face value.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to call this one a try it. But, you know, it's one of those things where if you look at it and you're like, oh, yeah, this is for me, then it definitely is for you. There's no flaw in this ointment. But the ointment itself is.
You say that it does a good job for standing on its own legs.
Oh, yeah. See, there you go. There you go.
Hockey's like, stop the puns. They're not punny.
Oh, and by the way, just in case you're. just in case you're thinking, oh, hey, I can, I know how I can play this. I'm just going to push all the save buttons at a time. Whenever I hit something, it's always going to be, you might come up with a strategy like that, like button mashing, basically. That will usually propel you like 300 feet backwards. this game is well designed to not let you just cheese your way through it. It's holy geez. Yeah, so this is a try it, but for people who enjoy this kind of physics puzzle kind of thing, it's a buy it because there's nothing lacking in its cruelty.
Nice.
So go for it.
All right, more bits keep falling. Thank you, Root Beer, for dropping 100 biddies now. Many thanks for that.
He's in competition. Oh,
clapping. That's adorable. All right, next game to talk about is Venus Improbable Dream, developed by Borealis and Rattle Lake Games, published by East Asia Soft, released November 12th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $9.99. Venus Improbable Dream is an immersive visual novel experience focused on mental health and personal identity. Guide Kakaru's decisions as he takes steps towards facing inner fears and reclaiming his life. Player choice affects how the narrative will progress, including special dialogue options for key scenes. Will you help Kakaru achieve something he never thought possible? Brooke, tell us about Venus Improbable Dream.
So, this game is definitely pushing the mental health awareness angle. You're playing as a young man who's so physically disfigured that people treat you literally like a monster. And the story is mostly about your experience growing up under those conditions and how you react to that. But the story isn't just about people treating you poorly and you developing mental health issues from there. Kakaru, the player character who we're playing as, he doesn't think he's some great, amazing guy who just got a really bad hand or something. He honestly sees himself, even though he's just a teenager, as a piece of shit who's just as responsible for his own unhappiness as his circumstances are. He knows he can be bitter and vindictive, and he wants to be better than that, but he's just really struggling, and that's normal at his age, super relatable for anybody reading. He meets a girl who's sort of in a similar position as he is, at least that's his perception of her. The game is about their relationship developing for sure, but my take is this story is a lot more about how he feels about himself and how, probably especially when you're a teenager, your first experience is trying to figure out how people really see you are really eye-opening and potentially life-changing. Whether or not this ended up personally being my favorite game ever, I want to say as somebody who prides myself in being well-versed in visual novels for both genders, I'm glad that I played this. Even though this one's mostly just marketed towards young men, I found it personally pretty relatable, and I found it refreshingly emotional for something that's, quote-unquote, for guys. Guys, especially gamer guys, get a bad rap sometimes that they don't have. They're not super emotional or they don't have as many feelings as girls. And this game definitely lets us know that they do. Games like this also make it super interesting to me as a visual novel fan to see the strong commonalities in a game like this compared to the female equivalent, the Otome games. I'd say a majority of the visual novels I've read across the board, whether you're playing as a guy or a girl, you're a lot of the time playing as a monster or someone who is born disfigured or who science experimented into disfiguration or everything you touch dies. Just generally lots of townspeople treating you like a monster, lots of struggling within yourself, wondering if they're right and you really are. This game was, that being said, a good gut check for me to remind me that it's not just the girl games that are doing that. It's all of them. It brings me hope. It also brings me a nice little laugh to imagine that there's just one company out there that makes every single visual novel and they're rubbing their hands together like every time they make a game, every time they make a dating game that's like, oh, make this one about someone who can't fit in and feels awkward. They love that. And, they're right. We do. We love it.
Nice. So overall, the game is $10. What are your thoughts on this one?
I feel very differently about this one than I did last week, for sure. $10, that seems just right to me, maybe an especially fair price. If you like visual novels, if any of the description Joe or I gave about this game tonight sounds good to you, this is a strong try it for you. It's very heartfelt. There's a lot of material and content in there. This isn't just a 6 to 8 hour baby game. This game's going to hit hard for a lot of different people who feel like they've had a difficult time fitting in or adjusting socially or struggle with mental health issues. This game is a mood. If you've played and loved games like Clannad and want more of that genre, maybe even those among you who like Steins Gate or Doki Doki Literature Club, which is one of my favorite games of all time, I'd try this. I'd see if you like it. I've got no qualms with the price point of this one versus the amount of content here. You're going to know within a few minutes of playing, of starting out, whether you want to play through this one to completion. And if you choose to do so, you've got a ton of material ahead of you. For the type of game this is, I think it's a really good deal. Art-wise, mechanics-wise, music-wise, it's good. It's really good for this price, maybe above average. Playing this game, it's obviously a mouse and keyboard game that, in my opinion, hasn't been ported into Switch with the utmost care and finesse, but at $10, that's not a deal breaker for me at all.
Cool. Aki wants to know if it gets less depressing.
I'm going to say no, and I do think... You know, it's funny that you ask that because I was gonna end this review by saying, you know, is this a sad story about just the nature of humanity set to sad piano music? Yeah, it is. But so is like half of all anime. So it's fine. I do think, you know, if you play a couple hours of it and you're hoping that it's going to get less sad, I don't want to give too many spoilers. And of course, the story itself is going to be open to just vast interpretation across the board. But, you know. When you're a couple hours in, it's going to stay heavy, even no matter what point you get at in the game. It's going to have that mood to it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Next up is Chris. Do you want to help me with pronouncing this one? Chris?
I unmuted Chris! The wrong thing. I unmuted the stream. No.
You're not going to help me pronounce this one. Oh, shit.
Gynog?
I was going to go Gynog. Gynog.
Hang on,
no, see. Guy later.
Jinogu is the Japanese pronunciation, so it's Jinog.
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 Yeah.
If Jinog, Jinog.
There you go. All right, next game to talk about is Jinog, developed by Masaya Games in Shinyuden, published by Rattleika Games, released November 12th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $6.99. Face evil creatures as a winged soldier in the side-scrolling shooter classic. Chris, tell us about this one.
Okay, well, Jinog, which I, up until this very minute, was pronouncing Gynog, is a... Hang on 1 second, though. I need to see something right quick. Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Root beer says Gynog.
Gynog? It's Gyn or Gynog.
Gynog? We could spend 20 minutes discussing the pronunciation of this game.
Here's the thing, and we should, but let's start. No, anyways, here's the thing is that it's a Genesis game that came out in the U.S., called Wings of War, and so that's much easier to pronounce, even though they spelled war wrong. And
okay, so actually, next game to talk about is Wings of War.
Yeah, exactly. You could just say Wings of War. Anywho's, and actually, I bought it as Wings of War. I own this game on the Sega Genesis, so I came into this already familiar with the type of game this is and the game it is. So, which is great. That makes my reviewing a whole lot easier. But yeah,
tell us about it.
The thing about this game, no, actually, I'll save that to the last. What this is a side-scrolling shoot 'em up or shmup or STG if you're fancy. And instead of being the conventional, you are a spaceship and you must destroy all the other enemy spaceships and or fish. You are a winged person. Doesn't really specify if you're an angel. You start off as a statue, so maybe it's like an ActRaiser type thing. But you basically are flying. You're actually a person who is flying through the air and zapping things with your magical shots. And the whole thing does have kind of it's half fantasy, like with, you know, demons and monsters and stuff that you're fighting, and then it's half kind of like cyber body horror. There's lots of like weird blood and guts kind of things that you have to fight in the game, and the game is overall very weird. It was made by thought I was gonna remember the name of it. It's made by Masaya Games and also NCS Corporation, who actually you might know from as the original developers of Glaylancer, which is probably why we're seeing this now coming out from Rattleika. And they also made such things as Choaniki. So if you don't know what that is, I don't recommend Googling it, but it's weird. So this is along the veins of, like, you know, one of their weirder sort of shooters. It's also pretty high on the difficulty. Enemies often take a lot of hits to defeat. Bosses, some of those bosses in the higher difficulties just take like a million years to shoot down. And there's like no indication that you're actually wearing them down. You just know that if you successfully hit them, they flash, kind of thing. You pick up power-ups, and the power-ups make your shots stronger and spread wider. You get magic spells, which kind of act as your bombs. They're a little bit like a supplemental of some kind. But it but they're limited in use. If you want to shout out Root Beer, you can.
Yeah, Root Beer just subbed for you.
Aw, thank you, Root Beer. Appreciate it.
Fucking yeah. Oh, right, Purnell?
Hells yeah.
I don't know. Which one of us said it?
No one yet. Waiting for you.
God, this confuses me.
You got to do the manual one now?
No, no, just manual. These are auto.
Do I have to actually physically play it? I was hoping Purnell would do it.
Fucking yeah. Fucking yeah. Fucking yeah.
Physically playing it.
Yeah. Now we played it. Anyway.
So, Wing
Gainaug.
Jinogu. Anyways, I must confess, I never actually beat this one as a Genesis game, because it is simply tough. It has four difficulty levels. It lets you choose between 3 and 5 lives, and that's just about it. But even on easy mode, it's like it doesn't stop the shots. But it's one of those kind of games that's like really. It's really cool to look at. The backgrounds are really compelling. Bosses are just these huge, like, creepy things. I won't spoil what any of them are, but a lot of them are, like, kind of weird machinery, like, crosses between, like, machinery and, like, undead creatures and, like, things like that. Like, it's got a horror element to it, even though it is itself kind of more of a fantasy game. But, you know, we saw this a lot of this stuff in the STGs of, like, this vintage. But it's not a cute game like Glaylancer. This is actually, like, you know, it's got some rough stuff. So that's the game. It's very it's popular among, like, Genesis STG fans, although definitely on the obscure side. Like, I had never even heard of it before I purchased it, and it's a good thing I did purchase it when I did, because it got rare and expensive at a certain point. So thankfully we have Rattalaika coming along, bringing it for a lower price and including a whole bunch of, like, features on this the PS4 version that I reviewed. Now we have, of course, the classic game with save states, load states, rewind feature, if you like. Also cheat options that are unlike the Cotton games I reviewed last week. You don't have to beat the game to get these cheats. You just got to go to the cheat menu and access them. And funny enough, unlike Glaylancer, it doesn't stop you to tell you that you should try and beat the game on your own first. It's just like, here are the cheats. These will make the game easier. This time they included 5 cheats. So, like, and they kind of range in, like, how much easier they make the game. That's basically the order they're in. One is you don't lose your items when you die, because you lose your items if you die. Another is infinite continues, which, you know, there's limited continues in the original game, so you cannot rich kid strat your way through, which is probably why I never beat it. Until this release. and actually the game has more difficulties than just the 4, but that's trivial. Like, it starts a second harder loop if you beat it anyways. So it also, like, gives you infinite lives, and then you can actually just toggle on straight up invincibility if you just want to see the game and, like, kind of figure out how to get through it without taking any damage whatsoever. So they really just hand you the whole thing on this one. You can also choose, like, to have, like, you know, your 4-3, you're stretched out to widescreen, which, if you're a monster, pixel perfect, again, if you're fancy, causes a much smaller playing field, but every single pixel is there and accounted for. I like that the, what is it? There's 2 pixel settings for it. If for how sharp you want your pixels, there's 2 settings. It's crispy and razor. I quite like that. I wish more things were called crispy or laser. Sorry, not laser, razor. Like bacon.
Fucking yeah! You
want your bacon crispy or razor?
Hey, Root Beer just gifted a sub to Aki now.
Hooray! Thank you, Root Beer.
F- Fucking yeah.
Anyway, you, yeah. So that's pretty much the review. That's the whole thing.
No, well, it's $7. What do you think of it?
Absolutely going by this. Come on. For one, you need to be supporting Radalaika, bringing these Genesis shmups to life so that they can keep going. Choiniki's going to be on that list eventually because it meets all the criteria for a Radalaika release. So, you know, we need that. For two, it's just a really solid shooter. It's really fun, and even though it's difficult, like, they've obviously taken the difficulty down to where you want it to be. The second thing is I'm looking at a copy of it complete in box on eBay right now for $199.
Oh, geez.
So this is your best deal by far to get this game into your hands. So obviously go out and buy it if you're in any way a shmup fan or just want to get into shooters, because this is a great practice shooter, to be honest, on easy difficulty with invincibility or infinite lives. I mean, this would be a good way to get your feet wet.
Nice. Sounds good. It seems like Radalaika is on a streak this week.
I know.
And we got one more Radalaika to talk about. Let's see if this one's good. Next game to talk about is The Prince of Landis, developed by Lorstrom, published by Radalaika Games, released November 5th on Xbox One Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $7.99. The Prince of Landis combines the character-driven story and dialogue of a visual novel with the exploration and puzzle-solving of an adventure game, a horror adventure with catastrophic consequences. As Root Beer gifts a sub to Serlina, she needs to visit our stream more. I miss her. We got to get her on the show again. But Prince of Landis, Purnell, tell us about it.
So Prince of Landis, I can't say a ton about it because, well, I'll be giving the game away. But essentially, the idea behind this is that you're a young kid named Evan who lives in the small town of Landis, Oregon. And everyone in this town is a piece of shit. Like, I'm just going to hammer it right out. Everyone in this town is a piece of shit, and this kid has to take deal with the brunt of it. And it's a very depressing ordeal. And eventually, one day, through a turn of events, an alien lands behind his house. His spaceship crashes behind his house. And the spaceship, even the alien, pretty much is like, hey, take advantage of you, do things for me, or else. He didn't really say or else, but, you know, he's a kid, alien scary, you put two and two together, what's being inferred by the kid, unfortunately. So what ends up happening with this game is it takes place with him pretty much running errands for the alien to help him fix his ship, retrieving items to repair his ship. And throughout the course of this, he has to deal with the unfortunate people in this town that he has to engage, being like his father, the school bully, a teacher, and just a few other like general NPCs in town. The game itself really is all that I've described. Like, you essentially get a request from the alien, and then you are in the pursuit of trying to get those things. So you might eventually, like, especially you get like some copper. So you need to figure out where to get copper. And it revolves around you going between, I guess, maybe I'm going to draw a round ballpark, 20 different screens to talk to different people to eventually get the thing that says, hey, you can find copper here. So then you go about getting the item that lets you get the copper in the place, get the copper to the alien, and then you get a few more things and back and forth till the game is over. I was able to complete the entire game with all the achievements in an hour and 44 minutes. It's interesting too, because after I completed the game, I went and looked up a couple other reviews because I was genuinely curious. And I've heard people say a couple hours or whatnot, like 4 hours or things like that. But one thing that maybe a lot of people didn't know about is that there is a button that lets you run pretty freaking quickly, which really does speed things up. You can pretty much just blitz across the map, from point A to point B. It's weird in that I get that it is a visual, it's like an interactive visual novel type of game. So it's not meant to be media or anything like that. And I believe it was also like one of the developer's first few games. So I definitely wouldn't knock it for that, because as a first game, I wouldn't mind seeing this person do more work, put out some other titles and see what he can do, especially if he like decides like do a little bit more with like the puzzly aspect of these kinds of games with items. Because I get that it could be a little bit tough to come up with a good like item combination structure and like they go like how to create an engaging like item puzzle for one of these kinds of games. So, and I can't fall back. I mean, ultimately, I did, even though I said I beat it quickly, I did play the entire game and I did want to see how it ended up. So, in that regard, it did do its thing. I wanted to see how this would play out in the end. But the thing that kills me is, and this is a personal opinion, but then again, this is a review. It's supposed to be personal opinions, right? Is that it's fucking depressing. And I went and did some reading, and I came across apparently the Reddit where the actual game's creator said that the game was based on events from his childhood, in which I say, any of the people this was based on from your childhood, fuck those people, and I'm sorry you dealt with them. That is fucking rough, because goddamn, this game made me mad for that kid. Like, there are two endings in the game. It says catastrophic consequences. I was happy with both endings. that's a lot, given the nature of the game. I wasn't happy, per se. I wasn't like, yay, jovial, but it wasn't like, oh no, something bad. I was like, eh. Yeah, I had it coming. I'm good for this.
Oh, God. well, so, don't give away any spoilers.
Oh, of course not. I'm not going to. I'm just saying catastrophic will be in the eye of the beholder on this one. But it's interesting to say that, like I said, it's not a game that you're going to feel like, oh, I'm really stumped on this puzzle. So I think I was stuck on one puzzle, but it really involved me just not talking to a person again that I had talked to like 30 minutes prior, and he said something different that triggered me towards an item that I needed. But aside from that, if you're the type of person that like plays these kinds of games and inspects objects and things like that, trophies will come real, or the achievements will come really quickly for you. As I guess I was playing on PS5, so in this case, it was trophies. Yeah, trophies will come pretty quickly for you, and you won't really find yourself being truly stumped, but the downside is that you will be doing a lot of, like, I'll just talk to everybody until something clicks. But with that said, like I said, I did play through the game, and I do appreciate the guy's efforts in making it, and I would like to see him do more in the future. So my sense is that it's hard to say like what I would expect, what I would look for a better, but I guess, like I said, the item puzzle linkage would probably be the biggest thing for me. I'd like to see him do more with like better puzzling, maybe combining items to do things, making items stand out a little bit more in the environment. If you're going to have, but then again, I think he used like one of those like RPG Maker MV to do it, so you can't really zoom in on stuff like that. The model's pretty much baked in, but nonetheless, like there is more that you can do with it, I'm sure, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with it in the future. So, as far as this game goes on the review scale, I'm going to give it a try because it's not a game that I found bland or anything like that. It wasn't bad. It's just fuck goddamn depressing. It's like, really made me sad. Like, can you think of a game where you've played and you just felt horrible for the main character? Like, not even so much like, oh man, he didn't get the girl he liked. Or, oh man, I bet he wish he had a can of beans in his pocket or something. Maybe in the next adventure. No, I was just like, this poor fucking kid. Like, I feel horrible for this kid. And he's not even real. He's fictional. But, fuck.
Man, between this one and Venus, it seems like we have some good old depressing stuff this week.
Oh, yeah. But we had Blue Reflection, and that was happy.
Yay. Well, we got two more games to talk about. Let's see if either of those are happy. The next one is Gun Kid 99, developed by Young Just Young, published by Top Hat Studios, released November 10th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $6.99. Gun Kid 99 is a fast and frantic 2D arena shooter that will seriously challenge your skills and reflexes. Craft your own unique playstyle and unlock crazy weapons and combos. Chris, tell us about Gun Kid 99.
So you are a kid, rather kind of a stick figure of a kid, and you are tasked with going into these stages, not really like a single screen, but it's like, I mean, it is a single screen, but it's panned. It's a little bit like Bubble Bobble 2, for lack of a better metric. Anyways, but instead of blowing bubbles at enemies, you're shooting things with guns. They're like kind of like just animated shapes in that sense, angry circles and whatnot. And the way it works is that it's not how many enemies you defeat, but basically when you do a loadout, you start off with three guns, and so you put those into your loadout, and those guns are going to drop into that stage intermittently, and the way that you score in this game is to pick up the guns. It's just picking them up is all that's necessary. And of course, you have to keep the enemies off your back. They're going to be perpetually spawning in and chasing you. But again, they don't actually matter. It's getting to those guns and picking them up before you either lose your three hearts or before time runs out. So it's not only timed, but you also have limited hits. That makes it a quite difficult game. Your three loadout guns are not very good, so you're going to want to hit up that shop pronto as soon as you save up enough money. Now, here's the thing is that as you defeat enemies, they will drop coins, and you can even purchase kind of a passive perk where they'll drop more coins, but not a whole lot more. And so if you die, you get to keep all of those coins regardless of what happens in the actual stage. So eventually you are able to build up enough money to put in a new gun, for instance, and, you know, something maybe a little bit more useful. And there's other, you can increase your max health. You can do like all these other kind of things, but it's all, all of these perks are purchasable. And they start at like $100 for the guns, basically. And here's the thing is that on an average playthrough, I would get maybe 8 coins per try on the high end, maybe 3 to 5 on the low end. So if this game, like once you hit a wall of difficulty in this game, which is going to happen pretty early on, I've basically... you're looking at like a lot of repeating a stage to try and save up enough money to buy these things so that you can finally make some progress in the game. So you better really like shooting. So let's talk about the shooting. You get into the game, and like I said, it's a side scroller of, you know, single screen platform kind of thing where you're constantly shooting off enemies and trying to pick up gun drops before they disappear and you run out of time or get hit too many times. It's basically a twin stick shooter. So you're controlling your character, running and jumping with the left stick and the jump button. And the right trigger button, of course, is your gun button. And you have the right stick to aim with. Or if you want to risk it on the auto aim, you can just push Y and the kid will automatically aim at the nearest enemy. Here's the thing, though, is that if you're just holding down Y, the kid does not autofocus on the next enemy. So if a wave of enemies are coming at you from two different directions, you got to push Y to aim at the one enemy, you know, shoot them, and then push Y again to aim at the next enemy. So it's not like super intuitive or anything like that. Or again, you can just use the right stick to aim at both of them, but that's if you're good at twin stick shooters, which I am not. So yeah, the action is pretty good. It's not really a world beater. And again, it does kind of require the better guns to like kind of make more headway. You're able to train with all the different guns. There's a free training section where you get to test out 6 different weapons, including a hammer, which is not a gun, but you know, whatever. you can throw hammers using your guns. That is to say your biceps and triceps, whatnot, probably some shoulders anyways. But apart from that, go ahead.
I was going to say the game's $6.99. What are your thoughts?
I'm honestly going to put this in the try it category just because of the high difficulty and the fact that you just don't get enough money to like really improve your lot in the world without having to play the game a whole bunch. That kind of puts it on try it for me. I wish that there was a little bit more I could do to like add some variety in there without having to play a level like literally 16 times. But yeah, that's where I'm at on that one.
Cool.
Apart from that, it's pretty good.
All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Horseshoe Crab Rescue, developed and published by Kevin Foley, released November 16th on the new Nintendo 3DS for $1. Hurry around the beach and try to rescue as many horseshoe crabs as you can before time runs out. Chris, tell us about Horseshoe Crab Rescue.
Horseshoe Crab Rescue, well, this is a game that just came out on the 3DS a couple hours ago, I assume. Its release date was today. While we were
its
talking
about...
Its purchase date was an hour and a half ago. I bought this with my own money, so I did not receive a free code to do this review, which is too bad because, you know, old Kevin's going to want to hear this. So this is a game about being somebody who wants to help horseshoe crabs. Now, here's the thing about horseshoe crabs. If you're not familiar, they're those things that kind of look like, you know, a little flying saucer with a little, you know, stinger tail on it. They're related to the spider, and they are 100 million years old. And you can learn all kinds of different facts like this by playing the game, because it is peppered with useful horseshoe crab facts, like that the male horseshoe crab will hold on to the female for up to a few days, which is, I got that one after level one. So that's a very important fact.
I hope your review consists of nothing but random facts just strung together.
If I would have gotten far enough in the game during this episode to get all those facts. But here's the thing. You got to pay the dollar and get those facts yourself. They're a reward for a job well done.
Very true.
And here's the job. You walk around in the first person. You just basically walk around with the left stick, with your stylus out on the touch screen. And it utilizes both screens for your field of view. And you have to walk up to an overturned crab and tap on him, whereupon you get a smiley emoji, and the horseshoe crab is now on its feet and ready to go, because that is their one weakness that 100 million years of evolution did not clear up for them, is the fact that if they're turned on their backs, they can't walk. And so that's basically what you do. There's a minimum goal that if you reach that before the timer is over, then you get to pass and go to the next level. But there's also a max goal, which is that you have flipped every single horseshoe crab that can be flipped in that particular beach, and you're that will end the stage early, and then you get to move on to the next stage and then repeat. Seems like there's a good amount of levels too, and it's actually all in 3D, so it's, you know, it is not a bad looking game at all.
So, cool. A dollar, what do you say?
I mean, I bought it.
Was it worth it?
Well, I mean, I'm over here talking about horseshoe crab males hanging on to females for several days in an official review of a game I bought for $1 on the Nintendo 3DS in the year of our Lord, 2021.
New Nintendo 3DS.
Yes, only new Nintendo 3DS users can play this. So this, Super Nintendo ROMs, and Xenoblade Chronicles 3D, that's what you get. That is your library.
Good shit.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's a buy it. Of course it's a buy it. It's a dollar.
Cool. All right. Well, that's it. We're done. This episode is finished. Thanks to all you for being here, hanging out, keeping me company. Tim as well for being here and doing his thing. Like his I thing. Said,
His thing.
His thing. Indeed. Like I said, music this episode, we're going to play our buddy Chris Huber's McDonald's Treasure Land Adventure song called Dude Space. So anyone have any final words before we get to that? The fuck was that?
Oh, no, you said dude space, and for some reason the person that came to mind was like, bro.
I thought you were a ghost for a second. You
I was. I'm a surfer ghost.
You're a surfer ghost.
Yeah.